Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm very happy to be once again joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan, Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Nick. I hope you are too, and I equally hope you are as well, Terence.
Excuse the lighting conditions. I'm in a somewhat darkened space at the moment.
Oh, dear. Well, it's good to see you.
Apart from your darkened space, Terence, how are you?
I'm all right.
Okay, well, let us get on to our first news story of today. And this is a bit of a glimmer of hope, I think. Although, let's talk about it and see what we think overall. So, we have been talking in the last few weeks about the implementation of the National Health Insurance Scheme. The scheme is basically going to ultimately result in the abolition of private medical insurance and create a state-owned entity which will be responsible for directing all medical funding, whether it's to private or public hospitals in the country. And, you know, while us at the IRR have, you know, opposed this thing for a really long time, unfortunately, the medical industry, I think, was under the impression that it could maybe cut some sort of deal with government on NHI. And the opposition to it was, particularly from the big insurance companies, I think a bit muted until NHI was passed after many assurances that it was going to be changed. The ANC also seems to have been under the impression that NHI would be a big vote winner for them. It was signed into law by the president just a few days before the election, and something quite interesting happened. Something which perhaps we could have told the ANC, but that the ANC was surprised to learn, which is that its election support dropped by about 5 points in the polling, in the tracking polling we had up till that stage. Looking like NHI probably hurt them more with black middle-class voters, who, just like all other middle-class voters, looked at NHI and said, you want to take my medical aid money away and give it to the government? No, please. I'm not comfortable with that. So anyway, then there's kind of been a battle that's now carried out over the last couple of months about NHI. The formation of the Government of National Unity included a demand by the DA that NHI be reviewed. But there are some within the ANC who have been very reluctant to let things go on NHI. In particular, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, the sort of chief bureaucrat and architect behind the NHI, and also Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, who is the current health minister, who is fighting tooth and nail right now in the public space to try and push through NHI in its current form without any adjustments. Aaron Motsoaledi's comments over the last couple of weeks have been very closely followed by us on this podcast. We've talked about how he first said that the Government of National Unity could be thrown basically in the trash if it meant that we couldn't get the NHI in the form that it currently is. He also said that attempts to oppose the NHI were nothing more than racially motivated Swat Ghaffar tactics, reminiscent of the apartheid government, which is a load of nonsense, never mind the fact that, you know, in part because most people who hold private medical aids in South Africa are in fact black. So we now are starting to see a little bit of pushback from within the ANC. This is reporting, I think, from City Press, which found that the headline is Ramaphosa allies warm to new NHI compromise option, but Motsoaledi and others aren't buying it. A proposal made by the Hospital Association of South Africa is a sort of midway dilution of NHI. As far as I understand this, and I'm still coming to grips with it a little bit myself, so apologies if I'm making mistakes. But basically, the proposal is rather than abolishing private medical insurance, this will be a scheme which will force all workers in the formal sector to purchase some kind of medical insurance. This is a scheme that's been tried in many other countries around the world. I believe Switzerland, Germany work like this. I believe the original version of the so-called Obamacare project in the United States had some clause like this. And the idea is that you sort of get everyone in the working space to buy into the medical system, and then the government subsidizes, I think, some of the poorer ones. There are probably going to be some continuing price controls and things that are unpopular with NHI, that are a problem with NHI already. So this is definitely not a flawless proposal as far as I understand it. But it at least leaves the medical, the private medical insurance industry intact rather than gutting it completely. According to the reporting, nevertheless, some senior ANC members believe that the compromise option can prevent the plan for universal healthcare getting bogged down in a swamp of relentless legal battles. The NHI plans have cost the ANC support, especially among the black middle class. This is an ANC official talking to the media on anonymously said, the middle ground option will give us a chance to show our members who have been alienated by the NHI that we do not want to take away their healthcare. This is someone who's a member of the ANC's National Executive Committee. He was speaking anonymously to the media. Pushing back very aggressively on this, though, have been Nicholas Crisp and Aaron Mozzoletti. So I think Aaron Mozzoletti's very aggressive comments in public about NHI recently, about, you know, saying that it must be implemented at essentially all costs, are him responding to these mutterings within the ANC that perhaps they shouldn't go forward with this idea. And Nicholas Crisp is claiming that, you know, the compromise plan is a system that many other places are trying to move away from, and that we must definitely implement NHI in its current form. So, a bit of a long intro there, but Michael, let me start with you. I would like to see some public pushback from the president on this, but it very clearly seems like at least people within the president's camp are not that enthusiastic about what's going on here with NHI. And I'm very glad to see that this is now coalesced around a concrete proposal, an alternative. What do you make of this story?
I think very significant on a number of levels, but just in the very general sense, I think this kind of flux in policy making is you know, it can be unnerving. It can be unnerving for, I'm sure, the health industry and all the, you know, the sectors that feed into it, the very expansive part of our economy, might well be, you know, wishing for some kind of clarity and hoping that it's going to be resolved soon. It might not be. But on the whole, I think the flux is very useful because it is really the condition on which dynamism will depend. And it's a kind of welcome uncertainty because it compels everybody to engage with what the ideas are. And if they want to be taken seriously, they've got to be seen to be engaging intelligently with them, rather than simply falling back on the false certainties of a sort of stodgy ideological certainty. So I think it's wonderful in that sense. One almost feels sorry for people like Dr. Mozzoletti and Dr. Crisp, you know, who've been so dogged and so sort of blindly persistent in saying this is the only way we can go. And it looks as though, let's hope, that the rug is being pulled from under them, and that there's a kind of ideological defeat looming for that particular way of thinking. I just want to touch on one aspect you've mentioned, and a few other people have too, regarding the actual numbers of people who are beneficiaries of private medical health. So if you look at, and the figures that you see mostly in public tend to be misleading. It'll say, for instance, that that the percentage of Black African people who are members of a medical aid amount to only 9.8% of that cohort, compared to 71.7% of the white cohort. So that immediately gives you a sense of a sort of a skewed, you know, kind of racially exploitative arrangement, which of course feeds into the ideological view that is expressed by Dr. Mozzoletti and Dr. Crisp, that this is, you know, it's about swathavar, and it's about people who the haves wanting to cling to their advantages at the expense of the have-nots. But if you ask the question, and the figures I'm looking at here are in fact from the government's own research agency, Stats SA, their general household survey released in May this year. And it says, I'm going to read the legend of the graph, which gives the a sort of bar graph, which reveals all these details. It says that figure 5.5 shows that 71.7% of white individuals were members of a medical aid scheme, compared to 41.3% Indian Asian individuals, 19.6% coloreds, and 9.8% Black Africans. Then adds, however, expressed as a share of all medical aid members, Black Africans comprised 51.2% of all members, compared to 31.7 whites. So it's just that little fundamental detail which I think the ANC overlooked when they announced the signing of the NHI, did the sort of declarative ceremony just days before the election, and where they were presumably imagining that they were going to be appealing directly to poor South Africans and lower middle class South Africans, that, you know, this was going to be this great gift to them. And what they had overlooked perhaps was the nature of our society has changed, that people do in fact regard their own agency and their own choice very highly, and they act on these things, and they are getting ahead wherever they can. And part of getting ahead is having decent, proper healthcare. It's not entirely unavailable, should we put it that way, in every state institution. We know that Critters Care Hospital, for instance, has a very high rating. But if you, anyone who watched the Tom London video at the weekend, this shocking video put out by a former broadcaster of some treatment he had at the Helen Joseph Hospital, with just, you know, a video of what the kind of conditions that he was dealing with and so on, and the care there, we'll know that there is grave anxiety about what the state healthcare sector can provide. So, yeah, covering a number of issues there, but I think, you know, the flux is very important. The idea that we're not going to doggedly go down a road simply for ideological reasons, I think that's very important. There are very good reasons to look closely and carefully at every single aspect of healthcare in South Africa, because there is so much improvement that we need, and the private healthcare sector has a great deal to contribute. Simply blocking them out is not going to be part of the solution. Yeah.
So, Terence, we've sort of seen this thing from the ANC in the past, where there's a bit of a cynical play that they sometimes do in the media, where they will tell kind of each audience what it wants to hear. And I think in the early years of Ramaphosa, this was particularly a problem, where it was sort of like, no, I'm pro-business. And then behind the scenes, he would sort of say something completely different to the World Socialist Conference. And so I'm a little bit worried when I see a story like this, that maybe the same thing is sort of going on, because there is so much opposition to NHI. But the fact now that there is some sort of concrete alternative being pushed makes me a little bit more hopeful that actually there very much is a real effort within government, to at least within some factions of government and the ANC in particular, to maybe, you know, moderate NHI. But what do you make of this, Terence?
Yeah, look, I think that as with so many things, the ANC's thinking is fundamentally political. It was unlikely to be swayed by arguments about the affordability of its proposal, or the sort of public confidence in it. Now, I would actually wager that very, very few South Africans, and probably many people in the South African in the ANC itself, didn't really understand what this was about. You know, the idea seemed, I think that there was an idea floating around that this would basically mean that all these wonderful health resources would become government controlled and everyone could have as much as they want. Now, that's not, you know, even what the NHI was saying on its own terms.
Didn't Panyaza Lesufi literally say that on the campaign trail about NHI?
This was it, that, you know, after the election, you can go and get treated in any hospital. Not pointing out that actually this thing may have been signed, but there's no infrastructure for it. So in effect, the NHI doesn't exist. It is maybe on the statute books. But yeah, you know, and what I'm getting at is that it kind of blew up because it's the withdrawal seems to be because it has hit the ANC politically, which is the language it fundamentally explains. Now, Franz Krunier said that their polling indicated that first of all, most South Africans hold private healthcare in high regard, not just those who have medical aids, but those who pay out of pocket, you know, many of whom are not wealthy themselves, but are willing to, you know, if you can scrape up R1,000, which is a huge sacrifice, take their kids to see a doctor, you know, in a private practice. And I think that that kind of loose idea that this is about the government taking over and giving you everything probably ironically worked, you know, just the blowback on that was entirely predictable, but entirely unexpected, because what that sort of thing has come to mean is that someone's going to steal all the money and you're left with very little, and you know, what there is doesn't work. So yes, you know, maybe you would rather not pay the doctor that R1,000 for the medicine and the consultation, but at least he's there, which, you know, is sort of comforting. The idea that, you know, someone was going to take this money and say, "Trust me," that just didn't wash. But yeah, you know, I think the ANC has also sort of talked itself into a bit of a corner now. You know, talked itself into a point where it has to make a choice. Do you carry on down this road, which is not popular and not practicable, or do you stick to your guns, a la Motsoaledi, and, you know, come hell or high water, and probably hell and high water together, you know, to get your NHI, which probably isn't going to work?
Michael, any final thoughts?
It should be an easy choice, but in this country, it's not.
Yeah, I think you're right, Terence. Just something that I thought is worth mentioning, and it's just very interesting. We were in fact putting out a press release this afternoon on the hospital association plan, and our colleague IRR campaign manager Makoni Marja points out that Hauser, the hospital association, accurately credits the ANC, in fact, with first mooting the idea of making it compulsory for all formerly employed South Africans to join a medical aid. And this was back in the 90s. And it's obviously an idea that the IRR has supported all this time. So it is quite interesting that in the interim, you know, there's been this kind of ideological drift into a position where we presented with a policy that's going to, you know, potentially cost the country hundreds of billions, and be a complete disaster. So it's quite interesting that subsequent to the GNU, we now have a much more serious-minded, practical sort of plan on the table, and everything is arguable again, which is exactly what it should be. It's a very healthy development, I think.
Indeed, that's an important detail that I forget to mention, that this was originally an ANC proposal, which I think actually increases the chance that the ANC might move towards it. Because, you know, the ANC is very allergic to anything that doesn't come out of its own wheelhouse, even if it broadly aligns with their view on things. Mm-hmm. So the fact that this is being marketed as an ANC proposal, I think, is actually this compromise is actually good for its political prospects. And all I can say is the sooner we see the end of NHI, the better. And I really hope the president starts being a little bit more explicit about this, because anonymous quoting to the media by someone in the ANC, NEC, who knows, maybe the president, maybe one of his allies, is not exactly the profile in political courage. to put it bluntly. Okay, let us go on to our next story. And this is just an absolutely terrible story of another murder connected to whistleblowers. So a relatively low-ranking engineer who worked for a Vereeniging engineering company was recently assassinated by a group of hitmen who thankfully were arrested shortly afterwards. This guy, Armand Swart, was a father of two. He was shot 23 times in what has turned out to be a case of mistaken identity. So the company he worked for apparently was selling, they were selling this part, which is normally sold for R3.20. But for some strange reason, when it was being sold to Transnet, it was being sold for R152 per part. This is something like a 4,000%, 4,650% markup. It's emerged since that what had happened was someone working for the engineering company had tipped off the authorities that this corruption was taking place, because it's very difficult to understand what else this could be other than corruption. Anyway, in response to this, it seems as though a R1 million bounty was put out on the head of the whistleblower. The whistleblower who is apparently known to the media and probably to the hitmen as well. However, it seems as though the hitmen hired were incredibly incompetent, because despite following Armand Swart for a few days and then assassinating him, they at no point realized that he was in fact not the whistleblower in question. Anyway, this is still tied up in the courts. The state is trying to prove that the men arrested for the murder are responsible. I don't think that they have arrested yet the alleged the sort of guy who paid the assassins. They've only gotten the assassins themselves. And this is eerily reminiscent, I think, in some ways, of the Bobita Diakran story, with a whistleblower in the hospital system who had her assassins arrested, but the ringleader of the mastermind is still at large, unfortunately. Terence, what do you make of the story?
Being honest doesn't pay in South Africa, eh? No, it's tragic. It's awful. This is the kind of thing that makes one despondent. You were saying before the show that this just sort of combines so many elements of what is wrong with South Africa. You know, not the casual violence, the consumptive corruption. Mm-hmm. In a corrupt and functional society, you would double the price on that. You know, 4,000% increase. But also, you know, what's the tender officer in Transnet doing? I mean, you know, surely that bespeaks either a degree of incompetence that just leaves you lying flat on the floor, or, you know, complicity. The other story is that one of the people arrested for this was a police detective. The rot smells bad in this one. There was a, I don't know if anyone remembers that prison drama Oz that was on about 20 years ago. There's a line in one of the early episodes where the mob boss who's in prison said, you know, like, I can't understand the world these days. You know, in the old days, we used to kill people. It was business. But what he seemed to be alluding to was that it didn't give them any pleasure. They did it as a kind of, as an imperative, you know, that at some level was against their moral code. You know, I think that sort of thing is South Africa. You know, too many of us don't even seem to have that moral code. Stunned.
I agree. It's sort of the fact that it's in a mistaken identity as well. It just adds to the tragedy and the farce of the whole thing. Is that, you know, freaking assassins can't even kill the right person.
Yeah. I mean, we were saying, you know, before the show began, it's bad enough to kill a whistleblower, but to kill an innocent party in the pursuit of, you know, the initial crime is, as you say, it just adds the kind of terrible tragedy to the whole thing. I just want to emphasize something that Terence referred to, the one of the accused. A 30-year veteran Johannesburg detective, a chap called Michael Pouletau, he was arrested with two others on the same day of Arnon Swart's killing. But there's this other little detail in the story, and it is, you know, we take it on trust from whoever's written the story for Jeff Wicks, who's written the story for News 24. I'm sure he's got all sorts of sources all over the place. But he writes, the investigation team, who have been followed from court appearances and who have received death threats, including from high-ranking officers within police structures. Now, this, I mean, this really tells you exactly what Terence is saying, that the rot is very, very extensive, very worrying. And it essentially means that none of us is really safe. You know, we're none of us, the very people that you want to turn to, want to be able to count on to protect you from this sort of thing, appear to be some of them, and I'm sure it's a minority, but nevertheless, that's what it is, are involved. And it's just absolutely shocking. I remember seeing the security, while I'm thinking of this, remember seeing the security camera footage of the murder victim pulling up at the gate of his company's premises, and then being, you know, the car just being shot at, 23 bullets. I mean, that's a hell of a sort of volley of shots. And it was just, you know, so hasty, so seemingly sort of casual. The assailants just, you know, pulled off and drove away in their car, not showing any particular sort of anxiety to get away at great speed. The whole thing is just too awful for words, really.
There are so many problems in this country that you can draw a line back to the criminal infiltration of parts of the police force. And, there are many important and positive things, I think, that the government could do in terms of policy and economics and all that sort of thing to, you know, get South Africa moving again, get the country's economy growing. But until we root out the deep rot in our police force, we're going to have very, very big continuing social problems. It should remain, should be a priority of the government of national unity. But if the ANC is not willing to disrupt the way things are going inside it, any future government should very much do this, start working on this on day one. Because, we see exactly here, the consequences are just atrocious. All right, let's move on to our last story. And this is, I don't know what to make of this. This is bizarre. But the parliamentary leader of Action SA, Apple Trollop, says that he has come across a report which says that the water cuts in the northern areas of Durban are caused by the DA-run Mgeni municipality. According to Trollop, the algae that is clogging the water system is because of pollution by the municipality headed by Mayor Chris Pappas. He says that Itigwini is supplied through the Nagel Dam, which is one of the dams that supplies it, and the dam gets its water from the Mgeni River, which cuts through Howick. The DA has hit back very aggressively against this. The DA's chairperson in KZN says the DA notes the clueless and hapless statement issued by Action SA's parliamentary leader, Athol Trollope. And it describes him as living in a made-up reality which doesn't understand that, in fact, the responsibility for water supply and management is from the ANC-run district municipality, which the DA says this information is readily available through Google. Chris Pappas, the DA mayor of Mgeni, also said, Mgeni municipality is neither a water service authority nor a water service provider. Responsibility for water and sanitation management lies with the Umgungundlovu district municipality, which is ANC-run, and the Mgeni Utukela Water Board, which oversee the infrastructure of the facilities referenced in Action SA's unfounded claims. A simple check by Mr. Mashaba's party would have revealed this basic fact. It appears, however, that this oversight is a rookie error from a party struggling with the depth and capacity needed to perform even the most elementary of tasks. Chris Pappas then goes on to claim that Athol Trollope is making these claims because there are a number of contested by-elections in Itigwini coming up. Now, as far as I understand, the DA's defense of themselves is pretty much correct here, that, you know, this is not really their competence here. But, you know, when you combine this with Action SA's very aggressive attacks on the DA, saying they're going to chuck them out of power in Tshwane, Michael, what do you make of this?
I mean, it brings home to one, you know, we've got very serious problems to deal with. But if we're going to deal with them seriously, you've got to start from a position of factual credibility. You can't just fire from the from the hip and you know, hope you know you're going to score some kind of point, and hope that your facts are right. You, with something like this, you really got to make sure that you're on solid ground. I see in the comment section somebody saying, you know, that they no way they'd believe Trollope over Chris Pappas, and this is the thing. You know, somebody like Chris Pappas has managed to establish his credibility. He's got a voice that people trust, and it's a shame almost to see that Trollope has made a mistake like this, because he was, you know, somebody who seemed to be absolutely solid, lots of experience, and you know, pretty steadfast. I've always thought it was a great shame that he left the DA in the way that he did, but unfortunately, Action SA is not covering itself in glory. And this is really an illustration of that. If you make these wild sort of claims without doing the very basic verification of the facts, it's not a good look at all.
Terence, what do you make of this?
No, I agree. I actually hold Trollope in some esteem, and if this is correct, he's got his facts wrong, and it's deeply disappointing. I do think, though, that there's an underlying current there, that there is enormous hostility between the DA and Action SA, which seems to cloud it all, you know, all interactions.
Yeah, no, in terms of political strategy, I don't really understand what exactly the Action SA's plan here is. I think that they had carved out actually quite a good niche for themselves as not being in the government of national unity, but still sort of, you know, being like an alternative for DA voters who didn't trust the DA's decision to go into government with the ANC. And in fact, if the government of national unity failed, I think Action SA would have positioned itself in a good place to benefit from that, and to say, you see, we told you, you can't make any deals with the ANC. But now they look like they're going to go into some sort of coalition deal with the ANC in Tswane. They have already signed on to the, you know, stabilizing the coalition in Joburg. And now they're sort of, you know, kind of firing from the hip, attacking the DA in Durban. And I mean, you know, even if Elgi was a contributing problem, and even if Mgeni's municipality was somehow to blame in part from this, I think it's a bit of a stretch to say that the very, very many municipal problems going on in Durban are, you know, somehow the DA's fault. It's just, yeah, it just smacks of very bizarre politics. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow. Cheers, everyone.